From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made next week when students across New York State go back to school. This year, back to school doesn't necessarily mean back in the classrooms, but in Monroe County, it mostly does. Only one district will not be back in the classroom at all. That's the Rochester City School District. RCSD will be fully remote for the first 10 weeks at least. Then the district will reevaluate that decision. Last night, in a live televised forum on WXXI, Superintendent Dr. Leslie Meyer-Small said it was a difficult decision, but it gives Rochester the advantage of seeing how other districts fare. This hour, we discuss the decision with the leader of the RTA, the Rochester Teachers Association, who advocated for a fully remote start and for making sure teachers are safe and protected. And we welcome a parent who has been uncomfortable with the decision, and we're going to talk about that. Adam Urbanski, president of the RTA, is back with us. Adam, welcome. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you.
Also with us is Pablo Sierra, parent of two students in the Rochester City School District. Pablo, welcome. Thanks for making the time for the program.
Thank you for having me.
Adam, I'm going to start with you here, and the superintendent told us last night, tough call, that there's no obvious ideal or right or wrong, but she's trying to make the decision that's best for everyone, starting with the students. How do you see this decision?
Well, I see it similarly to what Dr. Meyer-Small said. It's a very tough decision, but I'll tell you what made it not so difficult for us. Although we admit that there are advantages and disadvantages to each position, something has to be primary, and primary for us is the health and safety of our students and of their educators. That trumps everything else. And I am even more convinced now than we were at first that we made the right decision. And I believe that the overwhelming majority of parents would agree that nothing should take priority over the health, safety, and maybe even the lives of children, their educators, and the families of children and the educators.
When you see all the other districts in Monroe County, Adam, that are going to usually a hybrid schedule, that's mostly what we're seeing, do you think they're making the wrong decision?
I do. I believe that many of these districts will experience widespread contagion. Some of them will bring it back home. I predict that many of those districts will not only experience quarantines after outbreaks, but will return to remote teaching and learning until it is safe to put children and their educators in schools. We work very hard in New York State to make it one of the safest states with the spread of the disease. And I think that putting children in schools and their educators in schools, many of which don't have the requisite ventilation, many of them are unprepared to have the kind of precautions that would diminish the spread, is a huge mistake. And as I've said before, I'll say it again, there is absolutely nobody who could look a parent in the eye and say to them, your child will be safe. And until such time, I believe we should take the necessary precautions, even if it means that we would have the less than ideal remote teaching and learning.
So let's explore that a little bit, though, Adam, because first of all, I take the point that there is no guarantee of safety. And while this virus seems to do a lot less harm to children, it's not absolute zero. We also know transmissibility is a big concern. So we know all of those things. And I take the point that you cannot guarantee 100% safety. But then tell me what the standard is in your mind or what it should be, because this pandemic likely isn't going to be over this school year. It might spread into next school year. Is your view that school should be fully remote until the pandemic is over or there's a vaccine?
Not necessarily. As a matter of fact, we're going to learn a lot more in the next few weeks. We will see what the experience is of those who have indeed started in person and at school teaching and learning. We will see if either therapeutic or vaccination makes advances. We will see what happens when children, particularly little children, are confronted with the very, very unreasonable expectation for both hygiene and face masks and social distancing. I just think that this is a disaster in waiting. And if you're going to err, you should err on the side of caution. And yes, there may be some loss of learning, although we have substantially fortified remote teaching and learning. But loss of learning, as terrible as it is less terrible than loss of life and loss of health. So no, I don't think this is a close call at all.
So what will it take to convince you then, Adam, that the evidence indicates that we can have students in classrooms in Rochester and it is safe enough?
When the district can say that they are ready and that they are confident, they have reason to believe that those social distancing and face masks and all of the other sanitary precautions, and oh, by the way, a huge issue is ventilation. Our schools are not well ventilated. They don't have the standard recommended by CDC. When all of these can be guaranteed, then, and we see what the experiences of other schools and school districts, then we will reconsider. But we did agree with the district that about 8 weeks into the school year, before the 10-week period of remote teaching and learning, we will reconvene to reassess the situation. And it may very well be that it would be safer then, but I doubt it, because 10 weeks from now, we're going to be in the midst of the flu season. And how do you distinguish sniffles by a child or an adult or low-grade fever from coronavirus? You don't know whether it's the flu or a common cold or a deadly disease. So I think, and I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised that some people think it's a close call. Nothing. I mean, parents have forbidden their children to have play dates for the last several months. And now they're going to put them into a building, into an indoors environment with other children, some of which will abide by and some will not by the necessary precautions. I just think that everybody should err on the side of caution when it comes to our children.
Okay, and before I turn to Pablo for his thoughts as a parent, let me just kind of pursue that thread. This is a school district that has a higher number by percentage than the suburban districts when it comes to single-parent households, when it comes to poverty, when it comes to children who have experienced trauma. And often for those students, school is one of the safest places in their lives. Is that argument powerful to you, at least to consider, to say our district needs to be open so kids can eat, so kids can have a safe place, so kids can have that support and connection?
It's a very legitimate consideration. I agree. But, you know, what's also a legitimate consideration, by the way, as far as eating and so forth, the meal program continues. It's not like it's going to stop.
Right.
But let me mention another consideration. Our district is different also in another way, and that is that we have a very high percentage of our students who are children of color, black and brown children. And the indisputable evidence from the medical community and the scientific community is that the incidence of contagion and even the severity of the contagion is much higher with certain demographic populations than others. So we should take all of these considerations and weigh them and then decide what is primary, because if there is not one thing primary, nothing is primary. And for us, the collective wisdom of teachers, and I believe parents, because 60% of parents surveyed by the district said they would not send their children for in-person at school instruction. I think the collective wisdom of teachers and parents, and I don't mean to, I would yield to my fellow panelists on this talk show to express the views of parents, but is the collective wisdom is that the primary consideration, trumping all other considerations, is the health, safety, and lives of our students and their families.
Pablo Sierra, as the parent of two students in the Rochester City School District, what was your expectation and then what was your reaction to hearing the news that the district will start full remote?
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Evan, and thank you, Adam, for those comments. It's been a very, very difficult August and now September because we were certainly making plans as a family to have our children return to in-person instruction. We understand that 40% of families in our CSD wanted in-person instruction. We're certainly considering the hybrid model, despite the fact that it's not ideal. And we had just found out that our children were going to be attending their school on Thursdays and Fridays. In fact, we were communicating with other parents when suddenly the robocall from the district came in informing us that, in fact, all those plans were out the window, that we were going all remote. And so for me personally, as a parent, I was absolutely shocked. I didn't understand what had happened. Maybe there'd been a massive outbreak of COVID cases that we didn't know about. And no, there was none of that. There was an aggressive lobbying effort by the teachers' union, and there was a new superintendent in the room. And I think that ultimately that's what has led to this decision to go all remote. This represents enormous hardship for Rochester City families, because what's happening right now is that the option that we had, right, that decision on a family-by-family basis of enrolling our students in person or not, or going remote, well, that option has been completely taken away from us. We can only now do remote work and expect that our families, our Rochester community families, will somehow manage. They'll somehow figure out a way to be present to help their children log into their sessions, deal with technical difficulties. I mean, the question of even going to work is not at play here anymore, apparently, for Rochester City families. And so it's a pretty devastating blow, to be absolutely honest with you. In case we don't know these numbers, we should know these numbers, right? Monroe County has a 0.6% positivity rate. 0.6. Think about that for a second, right? When other states are in the double digits, are in the 5 to 10% range, we're at 0.6 and trending downward. So, Evan, if you ask me, this is an exercise in inequity. My neighbors, students who live across the Rochester City line in Brighton, in Greece, in Webster, in Gates Chilai, they will have the option of sending their children to school if they so decide. But for those of us who live in RCSD, who consciously or maybe unconsciously, this is the only city school district where we can send our children, we don't have much of a choice anymore. And that is devastating.
What do you mean we don't have much of a choice anymore? I mean, you're talking about...
We don't have a choice. We don't have a choice. I can't send my kids for in-person school.
Okay,
we
okay,
know.
Okay. I want to make sure you're not saying you're going to leave the district over this.
No, but I do think this is a point of inflection. I do think, based on this, a lot of families will say, I will never go through this experience again. I'm going to go to Webster. I'm going to go to Brighton. I'm going to go to Chilai. If it's within their means, I think the charter schools absolutely are going to see a lot of families come their way. This is terrible, Evan. If you're in RCSD and you hold a job and you have children, this is absolutely terrible. And to be really honest with you, the knife and the dagger, whatever you want to call it, at the end of the situation is this 10-week experiment, right? Rochester is not the only urban school district that is starting their semester remote, but it's the only school district in this region of the state that's imposing 10 weeks, right? We know that this is not the case for folks in Syracuse, in Ithaca, in Buffalo. We're the only school district in this region that is imposing 10 weeks. And those 10 weeks, let's be really clear. What the union and the district is proposing is a return to in-person school, perhaps, the Monday before Thanksgiving. That's a slap in the face. How do they really expect families to get back to education, to get back to jobs, to holding down two jobs sometimes, right? If we're now being told that really this isn't going to happen before late November. Can someone please explain that to me?
I'll let Adam jump on that in just a second, but let me just make sure I understand part of your complaint here. When you talk about transmission rates, Pablo, if we had Florida or Texas's numbers right now, would you feel differently?
No, absolutely. We would not. We would not send our children to school if we had Florida rates, right? But we don't have Florida rates. We have some of the lowest rates in the nation, right? And that's why our suburban districts in Monroe County are, in fact, making the right decision of letting families decide what's best for them. So, we want the option to have that decision.
And the reason I ask that, Pablo, is to, number one, understand that for you, you take the virus seriously. This is about taking the opportunity that we've created as a community in suppressing the rate of transmission, giving kids this opportunity. However, the governor said 2 days ago, Pablo, that he feels that what's happening on college campuses with a spread of the virus, increasing infection rates, and increasing numbers of colleges that are opening and then closing, he says, get ready. That will happen in New York State in some districts because when you gather people together, the virus will spread. The governor himself said that just a few weeks after he said, if anybody can do this, we can. Do you feel that, at the very least, what RCSD is doing is taking a look at the landscape? And then after 10 weeks, you can say, hey, you know, the governor was wrong. Nobody shut down. We're still at around 1%. We're in really good shape. We can open. We can take that moment to look around first and say, we don't have to do this first. We don't have to go first. We can wait. Does that sway you at all, Pablo?
No, it doesn't sway me at all. Daycare centers have been running since mid-May, and we haven't seen surges, right? So if we're talking about our young children, like Adam was suggesting, our young children have already been going to their daycares, and they've been following new protocols, and things are working. And for families who need those daycare options, that's been a lifesaver, right? And I can tell you this from experience because I also have a three-year-old who is in daycare. And so that qualitative difference, it goes a long way for families and for stability, for job stability even. So I don't think it's plausible to say, well, we're going to be the only school district in this entire region to sit back and wait and see. Syracuse isn't doing it. Buffalo isn't doing it. Why are we doing it? Why are we imposing it? And let's be clear, this is disproportionately going to affect Black and Latino families. Let's say it like it is. And so in a city that already struggles with extreme inequity, we're just adding on to that. We're compounding that inequity now.
No, there's a lot there. I'll let Adam Urbanski respond, and then we will return to that question of racial inequity. But Adam, there's a lot there from Pablo. Go ahead.
Can I call you Pablo? Please call me Adam. Pablo, first of all, what I want to do most importantly is to acknowledge that the frustration, the inconvenience, and the hardship for families is real. I don't deny that. Secondly, I would say that, yes, we're fortunate to have 0.6% spread, but the way to keep it this low is not by sending large concentration of children and adults into enclosed environments, especially at districts that admit that they were not ready to make it safe or even relatively safe for the children. The district, our district, is different than the suburban districts in that real admission itself, that they were not prepared to do the necessary testing, to do the tracing, to do the ventilation, or to even have both social distancing and wearing of masks. So part of the reason that we were motivated to push very hard for them not to reopen is to give them the time to become ready to do so. Now, Syracuse and Buffalo, we just spoke with them this morning. They are also starting the school year remotely. In their case, it's not for 10 weeks, but it is into October, into the middle or late October. And they have some of the same issues. Unfortunately, urban districts share that predicament where they are less funded and less prepared to ensure safety. So all things considered, the decision that we have come to and that we promoted is let's err on the side of safety, because we're not just talking about the children themselves and the educators themselves. We're also talking about their families, some of whom have family members who are elderly, some have family members who have compromised the immune systems or diabetes or coronary artery disease or other underlying conditions. So we feel that even though there are arguments on both sides, the overwhelming majority of educators and the overwhelming majority of parents, with all the hardships acknowledged, would make the decision that we have recommended. And I really commend our superintendent and our Board of Education for actually changing their plan and to put safety first.
On the subject of equity, I've cited this before and I'll probably do it again. Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle took the time to do some compilation of the numbers along racial lines. Here's what he writes. The schools that are all remote to start this fall, which is RCSD plus several charters, including Rochester Prep, are 88% Black and Latino. Schools that include some in-person learning are 23% Black and Latino. Pablo, is that what you're talking about? Do you see inequity there?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's precisely what I'm talking about. What is the distinguishing line? What is the justification with these rates? And I understand Adam's point. I really do. And I don't have any doubts that the union didn't study this very carefully. But what is really, really bothersome is to know that there are other cities that have high concentrations of Black and Latino students and high concentrations of poverty, and yet they've decided, you know what, by October 3rd, by October 5th, we're going to have a decision made on where we're going next. And here it feels like we're kicking the can so far down the road, right, late November, that in essence, there is no intent of returning in person in 2020. It feels very disingenuous to a parent to tell them, well, you know, maybe in late November, perhaps we can return to classes. Because Adam's right. At that point, there will be the regular flu season. And it will be very difficult to distinguish between a sniffle, a cold, and a COVID case. But again, then what is the solution? Because if at 0.6, 0.4, we are unwilling to allow our Black and Latino students in the schools, then what is the parameter for in-person instruction once more? Is it the end of June 2021? I mean, there's no win here for families that work that have children.
Let's let Adam respond to that. Go ahead, Adam.
Pablo, I hear the frustration, but let me tell you that the agreement is for the first 10 weeks, but agreements can be modified. So if the experience of other districts that did reopen is absolutely horrendous and there's a lot of contagion, it might go well beyond 10 weeks before students return to schools. But if the experience is the opposite, and we see that those who did open for in-person have not experienced adverse effects of that, of course we would be open to reconsidering the 10 weeks. I mean, there's nothing that teachers want more than to be with their children. There's no teacher who's arguing that the remote teaching and learning is more effective and healthier except for the risk of coronavirus, than in person. They miss the kids. They love the kids. They want to see the kids. But health and life trumps everything else. So there is not this inflexibility that we're locked into 10 weeks. 10 weeks, I think, is an appropriate time to find out what the patterns are, what the developments are. If necessary, we should extend the time for remote teaching and learning. And if warranted, we should advance it.
Okay. So, Adam, let me also ask you to respond to this racial inequity that, you know, those numbers are what the numbers are. That right now in Monroe County, if you are a Black or Latino student, the odds are you're not going back to a classroom. The odds are if you're a white student, you are. Is there a problem with that, Adam?
Well, of course there is racial inequity in every aspect of life in America. There is absolutely no denying of that. But we see it exactly the opposite that some people argue. We see this as advocacy for Black and Latino children. They are unfortunately in school districts that are underfunded, that are under-resourced, that are underprepared to keep the children safe, and those kids don't have a union. And we have a moral obligation to advocate for our students. So we see this as a huge favor, taking inequity into consideration, to our students, not to put them in harm's way. That is how we view it. We certainly are not interested in widening the gap between children of color and other children. We simply want to make our position a good fit with the students that we teach. And our students are in greater danger than students in wealthier, more prepared districts. And therefore, we should not ignore that fact. That is not a favor to our children to ignore that fact.
I have to take our only break of the hour, and I've got some feedback from the audience. If you want to call the program, we've got some lines open. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Adam Urbanski is the president of the Rochester Teachers Association. Pablo Sierra is the parent of a couple of students in the Rochester City School District. And your comments after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, 1% of the world today is a barely livable hot zone, according to the New York Times. 50 years from now, that 1% will be 19%. We're talking tens, if not hundreds of millions of people forced to flee, to find new places to live. Where are they headed? Are they coming here? What should be done for them now? We discuss it with Congressman Joe Morelli and others next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Liz emails the program to say, I am 100% in agreement with Adam Urbanski, and I applaud his courage in stating the point. To use a metaphor, people will complain all their lives about the beach being closed, but those may well be the same people who will never know the gratitude for the shark attack that was prevented. And excuse the use of mixed metaphors, but at the current moment, we have many blanks in the Russian roulette pistol, but that does not negate the deadly effects of the one bullet that is still present. And that one bullet that affects many lives may show up in any congregation, including an indoor classroom. That's from Liz. Pablo, what do you think about that?
I think it's a pretty extreme position. I understand where it's coming from. I understand that we're afraid of this virus, and we should be, but we also have done great, great work in reducing its impact in our community, in taking care of ourselves, in starting new protocols that affect every aspect of our lives. And we can handle this responsibly, because otherwise the message that we receive in this context is pretty terrible. The message is Black and Latino kids, because of how the virus transmits, are dangerous actors in this urban setting, but our white and Asian students in the suburbs, we don't have to worry about them. And so they will be able to receive in-person education if they want it, but our Black and Latino students will not.
Let me get Chris in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Chris.
Thanks a lot. So I think Dr. Urbanski mentioned a few times that it was an obvious choice to avoid loss of life by sending students back to school versus having a brief reduction in educational quality with remote learning today. But that honestly just feels really reductive and short-sighted. I mean, I'm sure he's aware that the single best predictor of long-term health outcomes and life expectancy is the quality of a student's primary and secondary education. So pretending that these changes in education today aren't going to have long-term consequences for our students, including consequences for their life, and again, this is mostly black and brown students in our community who we're talking about here, it feels like pretending that is just keeping your head in the sand and not on the side of advocating for our students' long-term outcomes.
All right, Chris, thank you. Adam, go ahead.
Well, I think that's a little harsh, but let me hasten to say that what this caller wants and what Pablo wants and what I want is the same thing. We all want what's best for children. The question becomes, what's the best way to ensure that, to advance that? And the answer is yet to come. We're all speculating. We're all speculating that the harm won't be as great as some fear. We're all speculating that the unintended consequences will be less severe or more severe. But we will find out soon enough. You will see within the next 2 or 3 weeks what proportion of educational institutions close down after outbreaks. I fear that it will be a substantial number. And I, bottom line for me, even if this saves one life, it's worth doing. Even if it saves the health of only a few, it's worth doing. Because as important as everything else is, nothing is more important than life itself and the health of our children, of our educators, and of the families of both.
I just want to follow that point before I get back to phone calls with a question for you, Adam. And I guess I want to try to ask this as thoughtfully as I can, because I think that there was a bad faith segment of the debate, especially in April when the pandemic was in its early weeks, and you started to hear this whole refrain of open by Easter, the president at one point said, you know, just as many people are going to die at home as they would if they're out in the community. I thought that was pretty bad faith. But I think that there is a fair question that says something like this. I'll try to encapsulate as best I can. When you have a fully remote district in Monroe County with a lot of single parent households, you are essentially telling those families you can't work right now, or at least some will not be able to work. Some cannot afford the child care necessary. Some cannot afford to find other options. So if some subset, if some non-zero number of children are from households in which their parent or parents lose their jobs over this, what is the cost of possible poverty? What is the possible? Because we know that poverty can cost lives. We know that kids are experiencing homelessness. What is the cost there? I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but I do think.
No, I know.
And I know it's not easy to measure that, but it's also probably not, that number is probably not zero. How do you see that?
Well, Evan, first of all, I think it's a legitimate question. It's not hyperbolic. It's a legitimate question, and it's the price we pay for protecting life and health. But here's what would be, in my view, an ideal arrangement. An ideal arrangement would be to give everybody a choice. Families who choose to send their kids in should have the right to send them in. But the same kind of consideration should be given to the educators, because their health is at stake, their lives are at stake, their families' well-being, health, and lives are at stake. So maybe the solution is the one that we haven't tried yet. Maybe what we should do is give every family a choice and every educator a choice. It could be a good match. Maybe we would have comparable percentage of educators who would be willing to do this to the number of families who would be willing to send their children in. Because our intent was never to either abridge the choice for parents or to create the kind of hardships that admittedly will be created for families as the price for life and health.
Okay. Pablo, what do you make of that?
Yeah, sure. It sounds like a wonderful option. I have really considerable doubts that it will be advanced or implemented in that way. I think I agree with Adam on one thing, and that is that there is a good amount of speculation on our part on what's going to happen. But there are things that we're not speculating about, right? We know that there will be immediate consequences to this 10-week remote plan. We know that students are going to have to figure out what to do when their parents are at home and can't watch them. We know that folks at the rec centers will have a higher workload, and they are still doing their work. We know the YMCAs are scrambling to help. And we know that absenteeism rates in RCSD will skyrocket. We know this. We know that remote instruction is extremely difficult, and that keeping a student engaged 3-4 hours into the school day is also very, very difficult. So those are certainties, right? Those are some of the immediate consequences that will affect our community starting, well, now, to be honest, and under this new plan, all the way until November. So I would ask Adam, I would ask other members of the teachers union, Dr. Meyer Small, if she happens to be listening, to really take these things into consideration when a decision is made on reopening dates, right? Because all those other folks, they're also exposed, right? They're also worried, but they're also doing it. And mm-hmm. that's where this unequal treatment of actors, unionized versus non-unionized, is pretty stark.
Well, Pablo, I think one of the rejoinders from a member of the listening audience, Nathan, says, I fully respect the parents' views about having options and frustrations with schools, but I think it is worth asking if the teachers are an expendable commodity that we're okay with exposing and potentially dying in an outbreak. Do you view it that way, Pablo?
No, of course not. Teachers are not expendable communities. My mother is a teacher in a public school district. No, and that's why I think Adam's option is interesting, right? That one of asking educators, are you willing to come back into the classroom? I think that's more than valid. Teachers who have children in the school district, I think, have the most difficult decision of everyone. But not all teachers have children in the school district, right? And that's where some of these fault lines start to appear. And these are really difficult questions. I can't speculate on them, but I will say this, that at some point, a decision is going to have to be made. And what I would say is that these conversations presumably already happened with teachers groups in Greece, in Webster, in Gates Chailai, and they're going back, right? So I think a more comprehensive discussion of this would have to factor them and how those teachers feel, and if there's overlap with Rochester City teachers or not.
Okay, go ahead, Adam.
Pablo, you're proving my point that we both want the same thing. We want what's best for children. We just have a different perspective on it, and we will know within the next few weeks what the anticipated or perceived level of danger actually is. But when you talk about teachers in Greece and Webster and other school districts and that they're going back, they're going back not because they believe it's safe to go back. Some of them do, but the majority of them, unfortunately, are in this terrible predicament where they must choose between safety to their health and lives and their families and an income. So they have, in some ways, the same consideration and the same problem that you said many parents have, because if their children can't go to school, they may not be able to maintain their employment and so forth. So we're all in the same boat together. And when you're in the same boat, it don't matter much which end leaks. That's why I think that we have to use the time that we have for remote teaching and learning, use the time to work together, the district, the teachers, the families, the parents, to figure out maybe there is a gambit or an option, a permutation that we haven't yet identified that gives everybody a choice, because some people are more willing to take a risk than other people. And everything in life involves risk. And we should not preclude people from having the right to accept some level of risk. So giving a choice to both, not just families, but also to educators, may be worth exploring. I agree with you.
Adam, what's the percentage of Rochester students who don't have internet connectivity?
Oh, I suppose much greater than in the suburban districts. And the district's been working very hard to provide Wi-Fi to those families and to provide Chromebooks or laptops and so forth.
But do we know the number? How many?
I don't know the exact number, but I would venture to say that it's a substantial number. And here is an opportunity for the whole community and for the city to help us with that. Because with remote teaching and learning, it's not very doable if you don't have either the tools or the access to Wi-Fi. So, yeah, that's a very legitimate consideration for us.
Okay. I think we want to get Susan in Fairport on the phone next. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. Yes, I'm from Fairport, and I have grandchildren that are elementary age. I know how difficult it is for them to learn remotely, and especially if they have a parent at home who's trying to work at the same time. And I was wondering if there's a possibility for the city schools to have just 2 days in school. The suburban schools, many of them are only going for 2 days and the rest is remote. I know that in Fairport and Churchville, Chile and places. Could the city schools work it out for 2 days a week for half the class, and like Monday, Wednesdays, and 2 days a week like Tuesday, Thursdays for the other half of the class, and the rest would be remote learning? Perhaps there would be more time.
Hybrid month.
Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
What the caller just described is precisely the hybrid model. And that's similar to what was being considered before the decision to go remote, that some students would come in on Monday and Tuesday, other students would come in on Thursday and Friday, and the rest would be remote. And that's the model that has less exposure to danger than everybody coming in, which, by the way, is totally undoable and impossible. You cannot have social distancing with 30 kids in a classroom. They weren't made for that. We are open to any thoughtful and reasonable alternative to either full remote or full attendance at school and in person. But I think that when a school system like ours openly admits that they are not prepared for in-school instruction, even a hybrid model, it would be reckless and criminal to ignore that and to say, well, we're going to come in anyway, and we want children to come in anyway. We had absolutely no choice but to call for full remote when a district says that they're not prepared to assure any level of safety for children and their educators at this time. They need more time.
Evan, can I jump in here?
Go ahead, Pablo.
Yeah, I think what the caller said is exactly what many of us in the city wanted as parents. We understood it was going to be a two-day model. And to be perfectly honest, that's also what Dr. Myers-Small had proposed on July 31st. And so the about face on August 13th, which is when we all found out that no, nothing that we had planned was going to come to fruition, that's where part of the problem comes. There weren't going to be 30 students in a room, because if only half of the student population was going to attend, and then half of that group was going to attend on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and Fridays, we were going to have a much less dense average classroom. And so, again, it comes down to choices. I'm not going to cry about spilt milk, but certainly families need to be given the choice of how their children are educated, and families who want to stay in RCSD deserve that. And I sincerely hope that, that's taken into consideration, because right now it isn't.
But Pablo, let me ask you one question. If your school superintendent and district say to you as a parent, we are not prepared, we are not ready, we don't think we can do this, would you still send your kids in for 2 days a week?
Adam, the issue is that Dr. Meyers-Small had a plan since July 31st, and then magically something happened. And I have to think it was a negotiation with the union, Adam. Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe you can correct me on that.
I can, and I will.
Please.
It's not because of negotiations. You know what happened? The governor came out after the plans were submitted. The governor came out, and it was televised, and you could watch it. And I watched it, and everybody watched it. And he announced additional safety requirements that are compulsory for every school district in New York State. Additional. They had to do with ventilation. They had to do with testing and for coronavirus, and they had to do with tracing. And our district, this is what happened, not negotiations with the teacher union, because the agreement that we have with the school district is not even a result of negotiations. It's a result of consultations that we had with them and conversations. So if you ask our superintendent, she will tell you that it is those additional requirements that were sprung on school districts that some districts could figure out a way to meet and others could not. And our district was definitely in a category of those who could not and announced it.
Okay. Pablo, does that satisfy you at least for an explanation on the timeline there?
Very, very partially. The timeline is, I mean, it's just so, so disappointing for families who depend on the school district to have children in schools. And if I can close with this, Evan, because I know we're running out of time. Hard Facts 2020, the August update, was produced by ACT and the Community Foundation. And it just came out a couple weeks ago. And there's something that we do have to talk about here. There's a 25 to 30% point differential in the proficiency scores of math and English students, Black and Latino students, and their white and Asian counterparts. When we see our students go into eighth grade, we know that the disparity grows by 30 to 35%. Do we really think the handling of this situation is going to reduce that enormous disparity? No, it's going to expand it. And that's why I would urge all the decision makers that are listening to please, please help get our children back in the school building if their families desire it.
But Pablo, is it possible that 10 weeks from now, a number of other districts will be closing because of rising infection rates, and Rochester will look ahead of the curve?
It certainly is possible, Evan. I mean, could it happen? Yes. And if COVID rates skyrocket, should we reopen? No. But if the rates stay at this number, we should be in, right? Like, our kids should have the right to be back in school. We should at least have the option. And right now, we don't have the option.
Adam, let me just close by asking you, for the parents who have expressed skepticism that there's even a chance of opening this calendar year, let alone the school year, is it a done deal, or do you think that there really will be a reevaluation over time?
Flexibility was never more needed than it is now. So I can only speak for my union and for the teachers that I represent, I was elected to represent. We will continue to be as flexible as possible, and we will consider both with the same deliberate seriousness, the positive developments that might accelerate the timeline and the negative developments that might actually extend the deadline.
I know this has been a challenging time for everyone, and I know there are strong feelings and views and a lot on the line here. And I want to thank both of our guests, Adam Urbanski, president of the Rochester Teachers Association. I always appreciate the time, and I hope we can stay in touch as the decision is evaluated and we learn more going forward. Let's talk again soon, Adam.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
And thank you, and thank you, Pablo, for your considerate and thoughtful comments.
Yeah, Pablo Sierra, parent of a couple of students in the Rochester City School District, taking the time to air the concerns of parents who were not happy with this decision. Pablo, thank you. Good luck to your family, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, a lot we're going to learn in the coming weeks, one way or another. There's a lot to come on Connections, and we're shifting gears for the next hour, and we'll tell you about that in just a moment. Stay with us.